Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Local Business Network Hour.
Hey, welcome everybody. This is Networking Squared. This is Al Crawford. I'm your host, and I'm really excited about the series again. This is actually the seventh year that I've been doing this show, and the idea of the show in the beginning of the year is to actually feature chapters of Local Business Network, which I am a part of. Today, we're going to be talking to eight members of one of our amazing chapters. It's called ComWest. And we'll be talking to eight different members of that chapter. The first one that we're going to be speaking to, his name is Darren Powers. And I'm actually got a little bio from him, so I'm going to read that first, and then we'll go ahead and bring him on the show. Darren is an author, speaker, and founder of Video Marketing Edge. He specializes in short one-minute business marketing videos for websites and social media like LinkedIn, Facebook, etc., to quickly introduce your business and make it easier to remember and refer your biz. Traveled internationally presenting to Fortune 500 companies such as Ford, GM, International, H&R Block, ADP, etc. Today, collaborates with small to medium-sized businesses on marketing strategy, marketing content for websites and social media with a focus on video marketing. 10 years with the Dale Carnegie Organization as an award-winning instructor, sales team leader, and business coach. Graduate of Eastern Michigan University in marketing, and also a veteran of the U.S. Air Force. God bless you for that, buddy. Single, has three daughters. Darren, welcome to the show.
Thank you for the invitation. I'm excited to be here today, Al.
Yeah, you know, and it was funny because, you know, as we've done this series through the years, there's different people that I've always really, really enjoyed, you know, having on, and you're definitely, you know, one of those people. So I'm honored to be able to begin this series with you as our first official guest.
Thank you.
So, Darren, I know that, you know, with these two-hour blocks, I know they go pretty fast, and so we don't have a ton of time to, you know, I'd love to talk to you all, you know, the whole time, but I really want to get into featuring more about your business and what it is that you do to be able to help your clients. So I'm actually going to have a series of questions that I want to start with, okay?
I'm ready.
Sure. So the first one is, why do business people need to concern themselves with video today?
Well, you know, in 2018, yay for the new year, you can bet somebody's going to be looking to get a preview of your company, your products, your services, or maybe you, the person. You know, maybe they found you on the web or you're referred by somebody in LBN. But because prospects today don't want to waste time, they're busy, they're distracted, more skeptical than ever. All you got to do is turn on the TV and something Trump, right? So they're going to go to websites or social media. They're going to be looking for a preview. And, you know, with a video, it's just a press of a button and a truly well-crafted video. You can position your business, your brand, as the go-to experts, the authorities, and do it in an authentic and approachable way to make a positive emotional connection in less than a minute. And you think about this for a second. 1 minute of video is worth 1.8 million website words. I mean, it would take six
Wow.
months to write that text in a traditional website. And I mean, who's got time to write, let alone read that? And then a video basically lowers the risk of contact, particularly if a human being is part of the video. Properly done, it can increase viewer confidence and trust, so they're not wasting their time. I mean, 59%, statistically, 59% of decision makers agree that if a choice exists on a website between text and video on the same topic, they're going to choose the video.
Well, I guess the question is, so, okay, great, so the people do it, but does it really work?
I speak to experience. So I'm off the road now. I wrote a book, Sales and Marketing, and I'm building a local practice. And one of my first big clients was Independent Window Repair out in Chesterfield Township. And they invited me into their business. And this guy already had 23 record years of success, every year, record year. So I was there not to help make them successful, but to add to success. We started snooping around doing a content marketing bank for him that's building reinforcing his ability to market what he does better. And I'm finding all this hidden value, all these things he does, all these little extras, and he wasn't even aware of it. He was so close to his business. And so I suggested, hey, let's put this on video. And what we found was almost immediately he was starting to get less price resistance because he was building value quicker. Within a couple of years, I worked with him for 3 years, we doubled the trucks on the road, we doubled the call center, and we found that video. He found it. I found that video could generate more value. It could drive more sales and literally improve his profitability. He recently bought a bigger building. He's expanded, and it has worked.
Sweet. Well, so that's one specific type of business. Can you kind of give an idea of, you know, what other kinds of businesses should feature video?
Well, I think, you know, any product or service where people want to get a view of you without much effort or risk. So it could be a contractor. For example, I was speaking out at the Better Business Bureau in Southfield, and a contractor came in from Jackson, Michigan. And after the talk, he came up to me and says, "I want you to do a video for me." I said, "Well, why?" I said, "Aren't there videographers out there in Jackson, Michigan?" He goes, "Yeah, I'm surrounded by them. I'm in all these networking groups. Everybody wants to do a video for me." He says, "But you don't talk about cameras and lights. All you talk about is how you're going to connect with a human being, your target audience." So we did a video, and he calls me back. Oh, it was probably 3-4 months later, start of the season. He says, "Normally I have 4 projects. He says, "Right now I'm looking at 13, and we're still counting." I says, "Well, how much of that do you think is due to the video?" He says, "That's the only thing we've done differently. We put it up on the Better Business Bureau. We put it up on the website, and people are telling us." And think about it. Contractors are high risk. And what we did is we took the risk out of having consumers call him by positioning him as the go-to expert. Another one might be a mover, Top Dog. They're part of our LBN network. And he came to me and the owner. He says, "Look, I hired a video production company to make a video for us some time ago." He says, "And then I bought some time in a local theater in Brighton. We're paying $1,400 a month. It's been running 8 months, and so far we've gotten 0 leads. So I put 2 videos together for him. I know we'll talk about a waste of money, but I put 2 videos together for him, one for his website, one for the Brighton theaters. Within a week and a half of running that video, which is 30 seconds, he says, "We've already gotten 3 jobs. So it can pay off. Maybe you're a doctor, an attorney, an accountant, and it's not always about more business and more money and more sales. In Farmington Hills, Dr. Friezo hired me to help him to build a content marketing bank for all his marketing and then to do some videos. And the reason he did it is because he wanted to make his patients more comfortable. So they go to the website, they see the videos, they'd hear the testimonies of people who've done business with him, and they're more at ease when they come into the chair. There's less preparation, less orientation, because the website does it for them. There's another doctor out in Novi, Dr. Wolf. He's a periodontist, and they brought me in to improve the business. And one of the first things we did was create a content marketing bank, gave them a special offer, started getting people through the door. Then we created a video for the landing page. And then some testimonials. Their business went up over 37%. There's out in Clarkston, there's a place called Fort Clarkston where parents bring their kids in. They let the kids play while they watch. Maybe the parents watch a game, drink a glass of wine, work on computers, and it, you know, removes their guilt. After we finished that video, it was a simple posting. I posted it on my own site, and we had 2,200 views in 3 days. So, I mean, talk about getting the message. And recently I was in a meeting for Shark Tank. I go to this one every month. I met a business owner in there, and we spent all our time talking about his business. And then at the end he asked me, "Well, what do you do?" I said, "Well, I do smart marketing videos for short attention spans." He said, "Well, could I see your video?" But we got distracted, and we're off in a different direction. Well, I'm about out the door. He flagged me down to see the video. I pulled up my smartphone. Today with video, a smartphone is one of the greatest marketing tools you can have. I pressed a button, and he said to me, "You know what? Our company needs exactly that for our service division." Now, we've been in talks now for the last 2 months, and proposals going back and forth. He needs a couple of videos, but more importantly, he needs a content marketing bank to build up the service division because he wants to bring in an extra $2 or $3 million. But this all happened from one 59-second video that established my brand, the perception, my expertise, and got the invitation to do business with his company. I mean, there's no way, Al, I could have possibly conveyed that much information in 59 seconds.
No, and I think – so what you've kind of opened up for me is that – so, like, website, yeah, social media, absolutely. But the smartphone part was something I'm just totally amazed. What an amazing idea. Great job with that.
Thank you.
So our listeners, you know, they're listening, you've kind of piqued their interest, and they're saying, I want a video. Can you kind of go over the steps, please?
Well, it's kind of simple. It's really three steps. Number one, you want to interview. We gather up marketing and educational information, write a script. You could be in the video or not be in the video. If you're in it, you can speak to the key points. You can read off the cuff. You can read off a teleprompter. Or I can narrate it, or we can narrate it, or a combination. We can come on site to do it in your office, or you can come to us, and we can do it in the studio. Then we edit it, we assemble it with other images, sound, and bring it all together. You upload it to YouTube, and away we go. We try to make the video process as easy and painless as possible. I mean, you do what you do best. We take care of the rest.
Nice. So I guess the other part of the thing, so I want to hire a video marketing company. How do we work out the cost? I mean, is there an idea you can share, or is it just case by case, or you know, how does that work?
Well, that's a good question, and it really depends. Now, if you've already developed a compelling marketing and informational script that positions you as an expert, an authority, and you're certain it's going to hold viewer interest, if you don't need any delivery coaching because, you know, your pitch or your presentation has been perfected, you don't need creative editing, you don't need to engage and hold the attention, then most any videographer or video production company will have decent equipment and probably can do the job. But if you're really concerned about how you're perceived and it truly matters and you want more than a nice camera and lights, here's what you need to look for. Don't just look for a video production company. Look for a video marketer. They're very different. You see, a video marketer should be expert in three areas. Number one, your story is a critical part of the message. You can't underestimate that. And your marketer, they got to know how to concisely establish what makes you different in a way that quickly joins the conversation that's already going on in your viewer's mind. You got to grab their attention. Then once they develop a compelling script, they ensure it fits you and your business like a glove, and you want to be in the video, then the company must be able to draw the best and the most authentic communication from you. It should come across naturally because, I don't know if you know this, but millennials and baby boomers alike, they hate spin. Right? They should, right? You know what I'm talking about? You know?
Yep, absolutely.
Businesses in today. And that's one of the joys of videos, that it makes that emotional connection if it's done right. They should ideally have delivery coaching experience so that you and your company can shine and be at your best. And to keep people watching, they should have expertise in how to engage viewers through creative editing, images, and soundtrack production. Now, one of the things I pride myself in is I'm a musician, and I understand that my Dale Carnegie background helps me to bring a lot of these things to bear. So when prospects view your video, most prospects aren't going to understand why they feel like they know and they like and they trust you from watching your video. But that's what it should do if you have a competent video marketer or team. Let's address cost. For most small businesses and professionals in the industry, it's going to be about $1,000 per minute from an A to Z for a professionally produced production. Now, you can get it for less. You fall into the category of, I'm already a proven marketing expert and professional speaker. I just need a camera and lights. I don't need any editing scenario or anything creative. In that scenario I just mentioned, you can check out, let's say, Craigslist and probably find something dirt cheap, maybe under $500. But you got to keep in mind that there are some risks. There's some unknowns, and there are a few shady characters. And, of course, you get what you pay for. But, you know, whatever you choose to do, you don't want to put yourself or your business in a position where you have to apologize for the video quality, apologize for the message, or apologize for the delivery of the presentation. I mean, if your accountant balks at the video, hey, I want to do a video, but, you know, they're going, no, 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 you can't do a video. It costs too much. Remember, the accountants deal with history. After the money is made, they don't generate sales. On the other hand, great marketing is the future of your business. Business video is like an investment, like any other marketing you're going to do. And with today's consumer habits of busyness, distraction, skepticism, and digital lifestyle, it can bring a much greater return on investment.
Yeah, sounds awesome. And I know people that have used this and have just been so amazed and so impressed by the quality and the professionalism that you offer and the stuff that you do for them. Unfortunately, our time is up. Could you please share your contact information with our listeners if they want to get more information?
Absolutely. They can go to info, I-N-F-O, at video, Marketing Edge. That's videomarketingedge.com. So info at, or they can call me if they'd like, or text me, 248-470-8379. I'll sit down with them, look over their website, talk with them about what they do. I will coach them in finding somebody if they don't want to use me. I'll do everything I can to help them, and I invite that call.
Sounds great. Well, thank you so much for being a part of the show today, and anything I can do for you going forward, please, and if anybody has any questions, please reach out to Darren. He's an amazing person at what he does, and thank you so much for being a part of the show today. Take care, buddy.
Thanks, Al. Bye for now.
Okay. All right, next we're going to have Hillary Northfleet in. She's actually the owner of On Time Web Development, and she's got 15 years experience delivering custom websites and internet marketing services to more than 300 clients, so we're going to bring her on now. Second. Apologize for the dead air. My studio is just sitting there spinning and looking at me, so... Hillary, if you're still on hold here, it should be just a moment, and we'll be able to pick you up in just a second. Again, I do apologize for the delay on this. When we do internet radio or Block Talk Radio, basically the studio is actually something that I manage as I do the show. So I'm actually watching these things live as they're happening, and watching the studio right now. I'm just basically all my calls are just spinning right now. So I'm hoping it's not going to be a big issue, but at this point I'm just watching this thing spin. So bear with me for just a moment, and hopefully we can get this done. Darren, you're still there?
I'm still here.
Yeah, it's not letting me put you on hold. So. What I want to do while this is kind of thinking about what it's going to do, if you could just spend a minute while I'm waiting for this to finish processing, if you could spend a minute talking about the chapter that you belong with LBN.
Well, I am actually the president of the ComWest chapter out in the Commerce West Bloomfield area. We have about 20 members out there and probably 9 or 10 past presidents. So it's a group with a lot of history and a lot of high-level people. One of the things I really love about our group is the competency, the level of competency, and what people are able to do to help other people. And, I mean, the other side of that, too, is the warmth. I mean, one of the things that I remember coming to the first couple of meetings and just feeling that, oh, my God, this is more than just business. This is a group of people that it's part of a small community. And it was kind of one of the things I was missing in my life, not that it would be missing in other people's lives, but for me, it's really made a huge difference, and it's really helped my business. Now, unfortunately, I haven't pulled as much business out of the group itself, but because we can go to other chapters, I've pulled a lot of business from the other chapters and met a lot of really fantastic people. The quality of the LBN group is just extraordinary. I went to a group this morning, and, wherever I go, the quality is very high.
And that was one of the things that I look at, like a person like a Steve Volk, for example, who's in the Novi 2 chapter. I know that, he shared with me he gets about 80% of his business from LBN, but if it was only just his chapter alone, it would be less than 10%. And so, that's really where the cross-chapter networking comes into play, so big for, a lot of different people. And for your type of business, absolutely. That's really where you need to be focusing. It's not just on your home chapter, but, getting the word out. Because you are special in what you do within our organization, that there's only a couple of people and really nobody that truly does what you do, in LBN.
Yeah, it's true. And the other side effect, I didn't realize this was going to happen, Al, was when I joined, I found that my marketing has improved greatly. Even though I am a marketing expert, every time I go to a meeting, every time I make up a new flyer, I made up a new flyer yesterday for today's meeting, I have to examine my business more closely. And it just causes me to think and to cogitate at a whole nother level about what's working, what's not working. It really keeps me sharp. And I just didn't expect that. I don't know if that's true for others, but definitely true for me.
Oh, for sure. I think so, because what happens is you're not getting complacent. It's always new people, new faces, and it's not just the same old people that that you get really uber comfortable with, which I think is something we can fall into. You know, for our other guests that are actually on hold right now, I want to try something. What I'm going to ask that you do is to hang up and call back in again. I'm actually going to disconnect those calls right now and see if they'll come back in. I've never, ever, in 7 years, never had this happen before, so I'm kind of in unknown territory right now. So I'm going to try that right now. And Darren, stay with me, and
okay.
Let's see what happens. It's basically, you know, back in the, like, the old AOL days when you have the things, the little thing spinning. That's basically what I'm looking at right now. And my it's not, unfortunately, it's one of those bizarro things that you just don't know, you know, until it's actually happening. So I'm basically looking at a screen of circles spinning around at me. So hopefully it's not something that's going to be
a beach ball of death, right? It's the beach ball of death.
Yeah, and it's really funny because, like, what I've done in the past was there was like three different ways that I could call in. And the only way that I never, ever had an issue was the way I'm doing it right now. I'm like, okay, that's working the way I want it to.
Right. Well, so if you live long enough, right?
I guess that's what, I guess if you stop being surprised, I guess you're done, right?
Right. This is going to make you sharper in some unknown way that you don't even know yet.
Yeah, one of my favorites was probably now by 6 years ago, and I was actually doing the show on location, and their Wi-Fi went down, and my show just cut off. It shut off, and I was like 8 minutes we were on the air, and I'm like, and I drove like really far to do the show, and so I ended up buying my own hotspot. So I'm like, okay, I learned from that. I started bringing my own hotspot with me when I would do these things. So you hope to learn from the things, but this is one of those things that I've never ever seen before.
You know, that's kind of like, and that is kind of like LBN in that, you know, when you give your 1 minute spot, you know, you're learning what is coming through and what's not coming through, you know, by virtue of, you know, trial by fire. Who am I communicating? Am I not communicating?
Right. Yeah, I
agree.
That's
another thing. And I cannot wait to get you out there to do. We need to set you up for a to work with our 1 minute spots. You have been heavily requested by our group.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to getting that scheduled myself. I'm actually having. I'm getting my foot fixed next Friday, and then it'll probably be a week or so that I'll be gimpy. But then after that, I'll be good to go again. But it's for sure, and it's a lot of fun to get out there and to do that. Because it's one of those things where, again, people get really complacent in their 60 seconds, and they don't even understand that people have no idea what they're talking about. And that's kind of the fun part that I see in doing this, that I've done this enough where I can, for whatever reason, I'm able to take a person's scenario and make a 60-second out of it very easily, whether it's a gift or a curse, I don't know. But it ultimately works out pretty well, and people are pretty happy about, you know, the feedback they get from it. But, Darren, I'm baffled right now as far as what's going on. It's actually been 8 minutes now, and this is not – I mean, you are the only call that has actually let me access. I cannot even disconnect. Like, it's still showing the other two people on the – not on hold, but they're floating around. I'm going to give this a couple of more minutes, and then if
– Maybe you need to restart your computer.
It's not – And if I do that, the episode ends. So if I disconnect, we're done. And it does not let, once I'm like 2 minutes into the show, it will not let me pick back up. It'll actually shut me off.
Oh, man.
So I'm going to give this another minute or so, and then we may have to either reschedule or see if we could push this back. Because what I don't want to do is blindside anybody that's expecting to be on and say, okay, now you're going to go on in an hour later. I mean, everybody's really busy, and I respect everyone's time, and so I'm not really sure where to go with this, because like I said, it's never happened. This is one of those never happens before, so makes me really happy.
All right.
So the only thing, well, I guess the question would be, if I should restart it, because what I could do is if I relaunch the show at 2, and then I could run it from there. Could we do this? Look, because I have like 5 minutes that I can actually do it. What I'm going to do is, if you could reach out to Hillary and just
all right.
let her know what's going on, and then I'm going to pick up everything else at the top of the hour at 2, and then what I'll try to do is to get Hillary on later in the show.
Okay.
Okay, so because we're missing her segment right now. And so what we went and do is all of everybody else come, you know, call in, and then could you actually just reach out to her, see if she could call at 3:30? Because what I'll do is I'll go from 3:30 to 3:45, and keep her segment. I'll just plug her segment into that one. Okay.
Okay. Awesome. So she wanted to call in at 3:30.
Have her call at 3:30. And everything else should be able to be on schedule, because I'm going to stop this episode. Actually, Blog Talk will actually merge it. I'll merge it with the other one when I share it out, so you'll have this whole segment that you can have for your purposes too. Okay.
Okay. Sounds good.
Okay. So for our audience, we're going to tune off for a few minutes, and then we'll be right back at 2:00. Sorry for the.
Oh, she said okay.
To me, I guess.
She can hear us. Apparently, she.
I'm
can
sorry.
Hear us. She said okay.
I don't know if she can. Again, like I'm totally baffled if she's even on there or not.
She just texted me. She's okay.
Oh, okay.
For 3:30.
Okay. Awesome. Okay. Let me get that rocking. Thanks, everybody.
All right,
and we'll talk to you soon. See you guys. Bye bye.
All right. For now.
All right, we're back. I do apologize for the delay. If you're just tuning in, this is Networking Squared, and we're continuing with our series of interviews. And it was definitely we had some issues with from a technological standpoint, and so we're going to be moving on and changing the times around a little bit here. So I'm going to be moving on to my 2:00 block, and my 2:00. This should be, as I'm trying to get organized again, apologize for that, should be Steve Eisenstadt. And let me see if Steve is there for me. Give me just 1 second. Steve, are you there? Hi, is this Steve? Steve, are you there?
Yeah. I'm here.
So, Steve? Hey,
yes.
I'm sorry about that. Was something really weird with Blog Talk. It basically just blocked me off of everything, so I had to reload everything in. So I do apologize, and unfortunately, we're going to have to kind of abbreviate a little bit the segment so we can kind of keep everybody on stage or on time for what we're trying to do. So I wanted to kind of get into this right away. And Steve, if you can kind of give a brief introduction of who you are and just a brief overview of what you do, and then I have some questions I want to go over with you.
Sure. So thanks very much for letting me be on your show. My name is Steve Eisenstadt, and I'm a commercial real estate agent. I work with the Friedman Integrated Real Estate Services Company based in Farmington Hills. And my job description generally is I'm a commercial real estate agent, and I'll be happy to answer any of your questions.
Sure. I guess the first question I have is if you could explain what is a commercial real estate brokerage and,
sure.
and what is your area of business? Because, again,
sure.
I think that's a really confusing thing for a lot of people.
Yeah, no, I agree. So I like to compare it to residential real estate in a sense, right? So in commercial real estate brokerage, as a broker, I'm representing either a buyer or seller of a commercial property or a tenant or a landlord in a leasing scenario in some form of commercial real estate setting, such as office space, retail space, or industrial space. I focus on office space. So I'm representing either the user of the space in a lease, which we call a tenant, or the owner of a building, which is generally called the landlord. And I work primarily throughout Detroit. Some of my clients have offices outside of Detroit, and so I work with them with a local broker so that they have a great team. And in a commercial sale or commercial lease, most times the parties use a commercial real estate agent. It's similar to residential. In most transactions, there's a listing broker and a buyer's broker, but there's always going to be those buyers or sellers or tenants or landlords who think, you know, they're better off on their own. So you see some of that as well, but primarily there's always a real estate agent involved because usually there's a lot of money at stake, and
right.
People with knowledge can help. So
I guess, you know, there's people I think that have kind of had their head in the sand for the last 7 or 8 years and are probably really, really not aware of what's going on. But what's the current state of the office market in Metro Detroit?
That's a great question. You know, you're right. Since the recession, things have been slowly improving. So right now, the vacancy rate in office buildings throughout metropolitan Detroit is about 16% on average. But you've got these areas,
wow,
larger office submarkets, you know, where they're hurting, like Southfield or Troy. You can visualize some of those large office buildings in Southfield or Troy that were built in the 1980s. But companies don't use office space as much as they used to. Technology has helped. Working remotely has helped. So tenants, businesses take a smaller footprint, and those larger buildings have more than 16% vacancy in many cases. So those two cities, for example, might have closer to a 20% vacancy rate. But overall, it's 16%. And then some areas that are doing great are, you know, Birmingham and Bloomfield is probably 6 to 8% vacancy. And along the I-275 corridor, we're seeing a lot of low vacancy there. And, you know, we're in a good economy. So people are hiring, which means they need office space. Our market hasn't seen any new office buildings go up, so that's helped. But I'll tell you, one struggle that landlords have is that rental rates are pretty much the same today as they were in the 1980s and 1990s. But expenses and construction costs, they've gone up. So it makes it a challenge. But overall, the office market is pretty healthy and pretty active.
That's exciting. I love hearing that. That's great news. So I guess for what I'm thinking of is for, you know, an office tenant who's thinking about relocating or renewing their office lease, what are some of the things they need to know, and where does your expertise step in with that?
Well, so sort of in a nutshell, I mean, this is what I do all the time, is represent office tenants who are either thinking of relocating or renewing. And so, you know, I sum up in a 5 basic points. One is I can save the business owner a lot of time and a lot of energy to find the right space. I know every office space and every building in metropolitan Detroit. So when I meet with a business owner or the representative and have a chance to learn about their business, their culture, and ask some questions, I can determine how much space they need, the type of space they need. And honestly, right at their desk, you know, I could come up with the top choices that I would recommend. And the majority of the time, even through a much more thorough search of the market, we end up at those spaces. I save them a lot of money. That's another point. You know, I negotiate leases every day, and there's hundreds of thousands of dollars at stake. And I know when representing a tenant where I can get dollars from the landlord. You know, a lot of money goes into construction. It's almost like building a home in a sense. Many times we're building out new office spaces. And so I help with that. And I have a great team of designers and space planners that I work with on my team. Fourthly, I'd say I have a law degree, so I know issues. I know all the issues in a lease. Many times I know more than an attorney who doesn't do this as often in that particular area of work. So that helps. And I guess lastly, making a move is a daunting task. People don't do that. So I can help coordinate that, make it easy. I rely on my LBM partners all the time in providing services like IT and phone services, moving furniture, things like that. So it's important to be organized and coordinated because an office lease is going to have a certain commencement date, and you need to plan accordingly so you're not late. So those are some of the things that I help.
So one of the other things that, so I know you help with leases, but you will also help somebody sell a building, right?
Yeah, totally. I sell a lot of buildings, and like the leasing market, the sale market's pretty strong. It's not like residential. In residential, we're seeing homes are selling pretty fast. For commercial properties, the time on market can be relatively long. But some properties have tenants that produce income, and investors want to buy those properties, and they're paying a premium for them. And generally, those properties are only on the market for about 6 months. You know, and because they have income and expenses, it takes a little bit of time for a buyer to do their due diligence. The more challenging situation is our buildings that are vacant, that maybe were set up for a single user and are designed to be sold to a business that would use it. Many times those properties can be on the market for really up to 4 years, which seems like a long time.
Wow.
And it is a long time, but many times the sellers aren't realistic as to the price, and they don't have an agent there to help them understand where prices are and whether there's demand or lack of demand. So over that period of time, the seller will generally raise or lower their price. So it's not a perfect market, you know, like homes are. But I'll tell you one phenomenal trend that's occurring in sales that I've been very instrumental with is the online auction program. You know, it might seem a little cheesy like eBay, but the highest value, largest properties all around the world are starting to be sold through online auctions. And it gives the seller a lot more control over the process. So typically you put the property on the market for sale and you ask the highest price that the seller wants. And there's no definitive time frame for an offer. So you might get an offer every now and then. It's not as robust as residential. It takes a lot of the control away from the seller. But in an online auction, you request offers by a certain date, maybe 90 days forward. You give the buyers the information they want. They make their offer on a certain date, so the owner of the property has the opportunity to look at more than one offer at one time. And you try to entice those buyers to make offers. So let's say the real value of a property is $900,000. The concept is on the online auction bid, you have a suggested minimum bid. So sort of like eBay, you might put $800,000 in this example. It might be attractive to entice some buyers. And the idea would be to get multiple offers at or around $800,000, have the ability to determine which of those buyers might be most likely to raise their price and negotiate against those people. So we're doing that a lot, and it's very exciting, and it compresses the time frame, and I'm looking forward to doing more and more of that.
So unfortunately, we are out of time, and what I want you to do is, I guess, one last question, and then I need you to share your contact information, website, phone numbers, all that stuff. But I guess the answer, I may know the answer to this. So the first step somebody should take when looking for a new office space is what?
Oh, you know, really call me and let's have a discussion because I can help people understand, you know, what they should be looking for and what the trends are and a variety of things. So first thing would be just call me, Steve Eisenstadt of Freedman Real Estate. My phone number is 248-848-3535. That's my direct dial. And my email is a little long, but it's steve.eisenstadt@freg.com.
Awesome. Thanks a lot, Steve. Enjoy the rest of your day and
okay.
Stay safe out there on the road. Thanks,
Dale. Thanks, talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Okay. All right, we're going to move on. Our next guest will be Carrie Goldring. Carrie Goldring is a fourth generation in real estate mortgage business, learning from her father, stepmother, and grandfather. Carrie's been working in the mortgage business since 1984. She's been told that her soft demeanor and patience has been a great asset to clients going through the mortgage process. Carrie started as a mortgage closer, and processor before she started originating loans and understanding the paperwork side of the business. It's given her an advantage over many of her peers, so let's bring her on now. Carrie, are you there?
I am.
How are you today?
I am well, thank you. How are you?
I'm great. We had a little issue at the beginning of the show. We had a little hiccup on the broadcast, but that's the joys of doing live radio. So
yes,
we move onward.
I was on the call. I heard. It was very interesting, but you did good job covering space.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, and in my head, it's a whole different thing, but it usually comes out okay. So
yeah.
I do want to get into this. I know we're kind of condensing things to try to make sure everybody has an opportunity. But I enjoyed the stuff on the bio, the fourth generation. I've never heard that before. You know, it's typically, you know, you have somebody who's going to be first or second. I've never heard a four generation thing. It's very interesting in doing it. I did mortgages from 85 to 2000. Till 2007, and so I was definitely in that realm in that whole period that you were there. So I want to get into some stuff, and this plays off of something we actually talked about on last week's show. And one of the issues was about credit score, and I think that as somebody who does mortgages, credit score is such a critical piece of what you do. I guess the question is, and this was when I run my own credit report, I get one score, and when a mortgage company runs my credit report, it's always lower. Why is that?
Right. Well, what a lot of people don't know in terms of credit is the scoring model that's used when you pull a mortgage report is different than when you pull a Credit Karma or you're going for a car loan or a credit card. So the different types of credit that you pull all have a different scoring model, so they put more weight on different things. So the mortgage report is the toughest to come up with. It has the toughest scoring model, and the score from mortgage companies is always lower than any other score you're going to get.
And that's a really important thing. I think people are kind of getting tied up on, oh, I'll go to freecreditscore.com, and then I'm all set, and I'm going to go buy a house. But that's
right.
The last thing, and this was probably the number one question I really wanted to ask you, and I should have started off with it, is that if somebody's thinking about buying a house, how important is it for that person to get pre-approved?
It is very important. We are so regulated in our industry, and all our I's need to be dotted and T's need to be crossed. I've had many people who've called to say, hey, I have a great credit score, I don't need to be pre-approved, or I have enough money in the bank to buy a house for cash, so that's not something that I need. And what they don't know is the underwriters for mortgage approval are looking at all aspects of the approval process. So you want to have your credit in line. You want to have your employment history in line for what's being required. You want to have your income in line. You want to have your assets and how much money you need for closing in line. So there's all these different aspects that all have to meet the criteria to purchase a home as opposed to just one or two. And the underwriters nowadays are looking, did you file your tax return? Do you owe money to the IRS? They want to know if you're a U.S. citizen. They want to know how are you doing with your savings patterns when you're putting money away. How are you paid? It's different if you're getting money from rental income or self-employed or salaried. So all those things come into play as opposed to just one or two.
And I think there's nothing worse than hearing about somebody who's fallen in love with a home and then they go backwards. They think they want it, and then they find out that their dreams are squashed because they didn't, you know, follow the rules and get things in place. Something else I want to ask, and this kind of goes back to my days when I was doing mortgages, is that there was a lot of flexibility, I would say, back in the day for people who were self-employed. How does it work today for people that are self-employed?
Today, you have to be self-employed for at least 2 years. Sometimes we're asking for 1 year of tax returns. Sometimes we're asking for two. The days of saying you're self-employed and having a great credit score and it ends there are over. And what a lot of people think is the income that they claim to the IRS is the same income that we use from a mortgage perspective to get approval, and it is not the same. We are looking at their net profit or loss. We're adding back some paper write-offs, and we're taking into account mileage, and then we're also taking away income that they have on their tax return. So we're really looking at it line by line as opposed to just the bottom line when you see that adjusted gross income number.
Okay. Now, what about people who own rental property? Can they count that rent as income?
Rental income is another great question. So in regards to rental income, people are receiving rent, but what they always forget is that they have expenses and they're paying for roofs to be repaired, or there's some time where they don't have rental income. So same thing as self-employed. We're looking at the tax return. We're going through the Schedule E that they file for rental property, and we're taking a look at the expenses and the depreciation and what taxes and insurance that they're paying throughout the year before we're coming up with an amount that we're going to consider income or a loss.
Now, what about people who may have in the past, you know, again, we know that when the recession, or people who had, you know, bankruptcies and foreclosures and all those types of things, what's the window of time that these people are dealing with before they can actually look at purchasing a home again?
It depends on if you're looking at a conventional loan or if you are looking at an FHA mortgage. For example, conventional, they're going to make you wait 7 years after a foreclosure, but only 4 years after Chapter 7 bankruptcy and 2 years after a Chapter 13. If you're going to be looking at a government-insured loan, which would be the FHA mortgage, their waiting period is a little less, so only 3 years on a foreclosure or a short sale, 2 years after a Chapter 7, and 1 year after a Chapter 13. So they vary.
Okay. And I think that there's a lot of people that time has passed. And
yes.
What I always look at is that person who's been, you know, renting either an apartment or renting a home, and, you know, they've done their time. And I guess the idea would be that they need to speak to you. Now, if somebody's looking to get pre-approved, what's the process, and how does that handle? Does it cost anything?
The pre-approval does not cost anything. It's typically a 10-minute phone interview. And that would give me enough information to pull some numbers together, get a credit report done, and figure out what documentation is needed for mortgage approval. And they're either going to be told, great, you can buy or refinance now, or they're going to get a list of what needs to be done to prepare them to buy at some point in the future.
Okay. And I know I'm backtracking a little bit, but what are the main areas looked at by a mortgage company for getting a mortgage approval? I know I mentioned those couple things, but is there anything else that I didn't touch on?
Probably too many to go off of. They want to make sure that you're legally in the United States, that you have a source of income, that you have money to close, that your credit's good. Want to know whether or not you owe any money to the IRS. They're going to question whether or not you own a business or rental property. If you've had a foreclosure, bankruptcy, or short sale in the past, those are probably the main things that we're looking at.
Okay. And it's great that you guys do that. I know, you know, people are listening, and I'm not going to name the names of companies, but there are companies that will charge you to get pre-approved. And that doesn't have to be that way. You can speak to, you know, somebody like Carrie, and she can do this for you with confidence and knowledge and experience, and it's something that you can actually go ahead and look at a home feeling confident that, you know, she's going to be able to, you know, follow through on it. Something else that you mentioned that I think is another thing that people aren't really thinking about right now is you talk about refinancing. And can you kind of talk about how that works as far as, you know, if somebody's looking to refinance, whether they're able to pull some money out or not pull money out? Can you kind of go over that a little bit, please?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the best thing to do is to call and know what your, you know, a good idea what your house is worth, what you owe, how long you plan to live there, and what you're currently paying. And are you looking to either save money, save time, or receive cash? And then we could do an analysis from there and let you know if you have that option to do something, or, again, if you're in a best situation right now and you shouldn't do anything.
Nice. And what is it, and I nobody has that crystal ball, but what do you see as far as rates go? Is it something where people really kind of need to put their thumb on the accelerator to do something sooner than later, or is there anything that you see coming up that is going to be a hindrance going forward?
Right. Well, typically our interest rates are coming off the bond market, so if the stock market is going up, our rates are usually going up also. So as the economy gets better and stronger, our interest rates are going to go up as well.
Yeah, I read something last week that they're anticipating that They're looking at like 4 increases in 2018. That was kind of like the prognosticators, but I didn't know if you had anything. So I'm thinking like,
yeah, I believe it.
Yeah. And so it is one of those things where time is of the essence. It's something where, you know, if you are looking to do that, you know, now is the time. And I think that, I guess another question is that we typically see people that are buying homes, they typically start that whole spring. Spring is when we're going to start looking. What advice would you give for somebody as to when they should get pre-qualified? And how long does their pre-qualification last?
Right. Spring is now. Get pre-qualified now. Run credit. So if there's anything that you need to do to prepare yourself, whether it's waiting a month for a credit score to go up or getting money in the bank to get a bank statement showing that you have enough funds to close, your opportunity to do all that to get ready for spring, now is your time to prep.
Awesome. And so could you please share your contact information so if somebody wants to get a pre-approval, please?
I can. Thank you. My phone number at the office is 248-504-4089, and my email address is C as in cat, goldring, at unionhomemortgage.com. And I thank you for allowing me the time, Al. It was great.
Oh, it's great. And I love talking about mortgages. I could talk about that the whole rest of the day, but unfortunately I have to move on.
Sounds good. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Bye-bye.
Enjoy the rest of the day. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye.
Okay, we're going to continue on. Our next guest is going to be attorney Joanna Abramson. She is with the Abramson Law Office, and her and her husband, actually Jay, specialize in real estate and construction disputes. And so we're going to bring her on right now. I've got to find her in the studio. Joanna, are you there?
I sure am. Can you hear me, Al?
You sound amazing, like you always do. How are you today?
Great. Good talking to you again, too.
You as well. And I know I've had you on a show a couple of times, and it's always a joy because it's like I think that when somebody thinks about an attorney, I don't think they're always thinking about the somebody who is as nice and as sweet and stuff as you. And not that you're not but it's just something, you're just a very nice person. So I think that you kind of go against the stereotype of what people may think.
Well, thank you. I will take that as a high compliment.
Absolutely. So I think that, you know, where I wanted to get into this in our segment is that there's different types of law that are practiced. And I wanted to kind of get into the type of cases that you guys focus on, because I think what you do is pretty unique. Are you there? Did I lose her? Oh, my gosh. I think I lost Joanna. So let's see. Where'd she go? There. Wait, she's right there. Are you there,
you
Joanna?
No. I sure
yeah,
am.
I, you, okay. So, yeah, I just – it's not a problem. I know that with this wind and stuff, I'm probably dealing with some issues with the phone lines and stuff. But the question I asked, I don't know if you heard it or not, was, you know, what is your typical kind of case?
Okay, well, as you know, we deal in real estate and construction, but in particular, what we do basically is collect money for our clients. Our typical case involves a real estate deal or a construction project, residential or commercial. But we are often called by a construction professional, a plumber, carpenter, installer, electrician, to help them to get paid on a job they've already completed. We help them by filing liens, by filing lawsuits, whatever is necessary, whatever it takes to get them paid.
And what makes you an expert in this field?
Well, Al, as you know, we've been in practice for well over 30 years.
You were 9 when you started.
My partner and husband, Jay, grew up in a construction family business and has a builder's license as well as a real estate broker's license. So naturally, we built our law practice to serve the tradespeople, suppliers, and builders that Jay grew up with. Our collection efforts have expanded, though, from real estate and construction to professionals, too, like attorneys, accountants, and doctors. We help them get paid on their large receivables and have built up a reputation for being very persistent and relentless.
So you actually, that was an interesting thing. So you have an attorney that actually represents attorneys, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
That's kind of a cool...
attorneys are our best friends.
Yeah, that's great.
Help them.
And I guess in that situation, is what do you think it is about you that makes you different from other attorneys?
That's a great question. We love real estate. We love helping professionals. And most importantly, we love going to court. You might be surprised.
That makes
many
you different.
Attorneys, yeah. Many attorneys hate litigation. They don't like going to court. And we do. We like to fight in court for our clients' rights. And we have a reputation for never giving up.
And it's over the last number of years, as I've come across a bunch of different attorneys, that was something I was really kind of shocked about, that I talked to attorneys who'd never, ever been in court. That's just not how they did it. So to hear you have that passion towards it is something where I'm like, this is really awesome. Now, I have a question, and I want to catch you off guard or anything, but can you tell us about a recent case you handled? Is there anything you could share about something like that?
Sure. Just this last month, we were able to collect on behalf of a real estate broker, this time being a commercial broker, a $45,000 commission, and they thought they'd never be able to collect it because the deal took so long to close, which is very common in the commercial arena, not in residential where you hear, you know, you've got five offers on a house and it's done immediately. But commercial properties can take some time to close for various reasons, and this client didn't feel that they would be able to get paid. By filing a lien on the property, we were able to make sure that our client got paid when the closing took place. And we didn't actually even have to file a lawsuit in that case. That's what 30 years of experience and a reputation for being persistent makes a lot of difference.
That's exciting. And I'm sure they were very, very, very happy. That's
very
awesome. So I guess, do you have some general advice to a business owner that is working on trying to collect their invoices?
Well, whether you're in construction or whether you have any kind of business, the most important thing to do is to get your agreements in writing. This is sometimes easier said than done, especially if you're a contractor or like a tradesman and you're a plumber or a carpenter or electrician. A lot of times you get your work over the phone. Somebody calls you and says, come, get this done. You can overcome that problem, but you don't have to, get to a computer and type up a contract if you use your phone and get a text message to your potential client and tell them, this is what I charge or this is what I think it's going to cost, and get their agreement to it. You can also ask them for their email address and send them a confirming email or, like I said, any way in which to get something that can later be reproduced, printed up, and used as evidence later that you had a contract.
Okay.
Because having a contract now makes it so much easier to collect the money. Second, if you use a written contract, make sure you have a provision in there that charges interest if they're late in paying, and attorney fees if you have to collect the balance. That way, when my firm or any other firm files a lawsuit, you can get paid back for your attorney fees. And the third thing I would always suggest for people is act quickly. Don't sit on your receivables. If you wait too long, it can get too late to sue.
Okay. And any special advice for subcontractors?
Yes. For subcontractors, anybody involved in construction, you can file what's called a lien, L-I-E-N, lien, on a property within 90 days of completing the work. And that lien will help you get your contract enforced. By that I mean when you're involved in a construction project, there are often a lot of draws made, as you know, probably having been in the mortgage industry. Those draws, with each closing, a title company checks to see if there has been any liens put on the property, and they want to make sure that that title gets cleared before they give the money to the contractor. So being able to file a lien requires, in the construction context, that you file it within 90 days. Very important.
Now, you had mentioned, I know, at the beginning of our talk about working with your husband. I don't know a lot of people that can really do that. So what's it like working with your husband?
That's a a good question. We get asked that a lot. And we're very fortunate that my husband, Jay, and I have been partners in business and partners in life for almost 35 years now. And I think our secret, it's both our secret to success in law and in life, is that we have very, very different strengths and skills, and we use this to our advantage. As you know, because you know Jay, he's a ferocious fighter, never gives up. He's fast on his feet, fearless. And I guess I'm more the nice guy, the compromiser, the mediator. And people learn that very quick. Our opponents especially learn that very quick, and they either get to deal with a nice guy like me, or I put Jay on them. So it really works out well. We respect each other's capabilities.
I love it. So where are you guys located at?
We are in West Bloomfield.
Okay. And I guess for people who are interested in contacting you, what's the best way to reach out to you?
Our phone number is area code 248-706-1700. Or they can reach us by email. Our website is abramsonlawoffices.com.
One last thing I wanted to ask you is that, you know, as people are listening and thinking about this, and I think we all know people who may have their own business or they know business owners, and that this is kind of that thing that people don't really want to talk about that much, but people who aren't paying them, can you kind of go over, you know, a little bit more about who, like, your best referral sources are?
Sure. Absolutely. One of our best referral sources is real estate professionals, people who are either agents or brokers, either in the commercial or residential context. We are very helpful to them, both in terms of collecting their own commissions and by helping their clients resolve their real estate issues. Secondly, other attorneys, any attorney people know, is a very good referral source for us because most attorneys, like I said, not only do not like to go to court, but they don't do collection. So even if they are court attorneys, they often don't do the collection work we do. So attorneys are great referrals for us, and it's never a problem to send any attorney our way. We are not usually in competition. And I guess the last best referral source for me are people who are financial planners. People who deal with other people's wealth. And the reason that is those people are usually the first to hear about a problem. They might hear that, you know, somebody in their family owes them a lot of money or somebody in their business isn't paying, or those are the kinds of information that financial planners often hear. So they become very good financial, good referral sources for us.
So if somebody is not sure, I guess they're not sure if what they have is enough to need your services, is it something, can they just call you and kind of go over that, or how would that process work?
Absolutely. It is free to call us. We do not have a consultation charge. We will usually listen very carefully to what how much it is, what their evidence is, right over the phone, and determine fairly easily whether there is a case there and whether it's something that it makes sense for us to take on. We do work on you know, a very flexible basis with people, so people should not shy away from calling if they think it might be too expensive for them. It is free to talk to us.
Yeah, I mean, like you just said, you had that one they thought they would never get collected, and it was a $45,000 deal. I mean, that was can you imagine somebody letting that go? And the reality is people probably do. They probably do it all the time, don't they?
I do, and I know there are people out there listening who, you know, have this nagging issue. You know, somebody owes them money, and it could be a family member. It could be somebody in their business that owes them money that's really weighing down their bottom line. I mean, they can't make a new investment. They can't do things that they want to do either for themselves personally or for their businesses because they're being dragged down by this bad debt, so to speak. And this is something that we often can help really change a business's picture if they get this situation resolved. And Jay is ready and willing to fight the fight for them. And that's why our tagline is, if they don't pay, call Jay.
I love it. Well, thank you so much, Joanna. It was, as always, great spending the time with you and learning more about what you and your husband offer for your clients. And thank you so much for being a part of the show today. We'll talk to you soon, okay?
Thank you, Al, for having us.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, we're going to move on. Our next guest is going to be Christine Allison. She's with Crystal Clear Consulting, and I'm just going to looking for her number right now. Here it is. Christine, are you there?
Hi, Al. Good afternoon.
Hi, how are you
doing?
I'm really good. It's great to hear you. Another one of those, like, there's those voices that I know I hear that I always smile when I hear your voice. So it's great to talk to you, and I'm glad you're able to be a part of the show today.
It's my pleasure.
So I guess I wanted to get into, and I was looking at the name with your Crystal Clear Consulting. Can you kind of define, you know, what does that mean?
What I do is I help people who are moving through the process of change to get crystal clear to make conscious choices. And what I mean by that is I'm a life coach. I'm author of a book called So You Want to Make a Change, and I'm a certified hypnotherapist. So since life is change and it's the only constant, you know how when we go through change, we want to do it the old way, right?
Oh, yeah.
Well,
yep.
So right? And what Socrates said is the secret of change is to focus all of your energy not on fighting the old, but on building the new. And that's what I do. I help people to let go of what no longer serves them, whether it's ways of thinking, patterns of behavior, beliefs, and then to gracefully and courageously embrace and adopt new ways of being that's going to serve them and being in this next new phase of their life, whatever that may be, their new chapter. Because when we stand resistance to the change that we're experiencing, it just makes it painful. So I help to help reduce the fear of change and turn it into love, first for themselves and then to embrace what is the next life change, transition, goal that they want to accomplish, and help them get really crystal clear about how to do that.
What I think about is when, you know, somebody's listening to the show today, and what I'm hoping they can do is envision that this be either them or someone they love or someone they know. But what are the kinds of issues that people typically come to you for?
I help people with health and wellness issues, generally speaking. And then specifically, for instance, I just had a client who called me who was going through the cancer journey. This is a huge issue. One in three of us are going to have cancer, and every one of us is touched by someone who's had it, including myself. I had a diagnosis of endometrial cancer, and it's successfully behind me now. So this client called me. She said, look, I'm an attorney. I have to be able to think, and I can't. Only thing that I know is that I had to work with you because I just received the same diagnosis you had. And what I did is I helped with her to put herself first for the first time in the context of how to stay centered, what's necessary to make her best decisions, where to put her focus, what thoughts could she use that were going to help make her stronger as she went through that, how to be the best advocate for herself with her doctors, how to handle all the decisions coming at her. So with every session that I worked with her, I could hear and feel her relief. And she told me she had no idea how she could have done that. So that's an example. I also help people with pre- and post-divorce support. I help people with work-life balance, goals coaching. I work with families. I work with entire companies. So those who are going through a change, and sometimes it's a change that they feel like they're forced to go through. Sometimes it's, you know what, something's not working in my life and I don't know what it is. I just feel like I'm struggling and how do I move forward. So I work with people who are in that position as well.
Well, I know that you've shared the fact that you're a cancer survivor, but what else do you think that, you know, that you bring that makes you unique to the people out there?
Well, I have to say, I not only consider myself a survivor, I consider myself a thriver, someone who really has used my experience to really help my clients to become the most powerful after they move through their change. So part of what makes me unique is that I'm a life coach and a certified hypnotherapist, and that's a particularly unusual combination. I have the ability with my background, which started in development and corporate change, to work with people on an integrated basis. So I have more tools to offer. So let me give you an example of that. So I had a client recently who came to me to reduce stress. And you know, that's the number one prescription drug is for anxiety. So this client comes to me, and those drugs, they're helpful, but they only treat the symptoms and they don't get to the root cause of why the stress is there to start with. So this client, she had a therapist who put her on an antidepressant, but she came to me because she had a fear of needles that kept her from getting, you know, blood work and annual checkups and that kind of thing. So I used hypnosis to help her with that. But because of my life coaching background, I do a much deeper initial consultation or front-end assessment with my clients. So what I found out when I did that was the real root cause of what was going on with her and the anxiety she was experiencing was because she'd been sexually exploited by someone who was supposed to be her mentor and teacher.
Wow. Now
she could do, you know, hashtag me too right now, you know. So I taught her tools to use to consciously reduce stress. I taught her tools to create healthy boundaries, which came out of my book. So I taught her conscious tools from my coaching background, and I did the hypnosis with her to help instill confidence and belief in herself on a level she had not experienced it before. And I taught her how to identify and work with all of who she is. And by that I mean physically, emotionally, mentally, and spiritually or intuitively. So that now, by the end of her work, she's no longer haunted by her memories of what happened to her, which caused her to constantly doubt herself. But she's now able to focus on and has the tools to create the future she wants for herself. You know, only 2 to 8% of what we do on a conscious basis. That's it.
Right. That's crazy.
So, no,
I guess it's
isn't
a bad,
that crazy?
And that's near, I probably shouldn't have used that word, but.
I mean, it's amazing, right? So
92 to 90%
of what we do subconsciously. I mean,
wow,
right? So I help my clients to work with 100% of who they are, both consciously and unconsciously or subconsciously. And that's, I think, what sets me apart from a lot of my colleagues who have their own unique skill sets.
I guess, so how is, this would always be the thing that I would say would be my biggest challenge for people kind of realizing that they have a problem. And I think that so many people try to self-treat, they try to work it out for themselves. What advice can you give to someone that basically to say stop and this is the time they need to start seeing, you know, you?
Well, so I think of them as three life truths, right? And the first one is you do not make decisions that are good for you from a place of fear. You just can't.
Right.
Right? So the second really important truth is that you cannot know what you do not know. And when 92 to 98% of what we're doing is being done subconsciously, that falls into the you do not know what you do not know category.
Right.
Not consciously, right? And then the third one is what we started with, which is change is the only constant. So not to fight that, but to bring in an ally. I mean, you don't do your own dental work. You go to a dentist. You go to someone who specializes in the area of what you need some support in. And it doesn't mean that you're incapable. It doesn't mean that you're not enough. It just means that here is someone who has a skill set that you may or may not have. I taught communications and problem solving and conflict resolution and process mapping to corporate clients. You know, I trained in process change consulting so that I could work not only with individuals, but entire organizations from an integrated systemic approach. So I have tools that most people don't necessarily have. I can talk about how to approach a problem systemically, how to approach an issue from not only the arenas that you're aware of, but areas that might seem unrelated. I had a client call me who said, you know what, my wife is not eating. She is in like one of those Metalodge kind of facilities because she's
on a feeding
tube. You know,
wow.
She's on a feeding tube, had not eaten for months anything of substance. And he called me because he was a guy who had quit smoking using hypnotherapy. So he knew hypnosis was powerful. And they'd gone to the doctors, and the doctors had done a total workup, and they said, you know what? And the doctor looked at her and said, it's literally all in your head, and walked out in a rather dismissive manner, which was not helpful for her. What that did give her, though, is the information to know that nothing was going on physically. So they called me in. I went to the facility after getting permission to work on site with her. I did my usual consult, and then I worked with her, and I did a really long session with her. And I scheduled follow-up appointments to reinforce our work because hypnosis literally lays down, you know, new pathways in the brain, right? So you want to strengthen that. So this was all done like on a Friday. I get a call from her husband on Tuesday who said, you know what? We don't need any other sessions. She is eating. We're in the process of going home. Isn't that incredible? I mean, wow. So that's an extreme example, but it's also a really clear example of how there are times that we just can't get out of our own way, no matter how much we want to sometimes. And that's when you come find me.
So I guess the question would be then, is there a variety? So the different types of things you just mentioned about actually going to see someone, is there a norm? Is it typically somebody's coming to you, you go to them, or does it depend upon the scenario?
Well, you know, in that case, that poor man, they were beside themselves. He's like, well, you know, I don't know how to get my wife out of the facility. I can maybe ask someone to help me move her. She's all hooked up to tubes. I said, look, don't even think about that. I am coming to you. I'm fine with that. We needed to make sure that we could set it up so I could work with her uninterrupted. And he did that, and we worked successfully and created that. But most of the time, clients come to me. I have an office in Farmington. And usually my sessions are about an hour, sometimes an hour and a half, depending on how much conscious coaching people want in addition to doing hypnosis. And sometimes I have clients who come to me and say, you know what, I'm not comfortable with the hypnosis. Will you just do coaching with me? And I have the ability to do one, both, or any combination of them.
So I guess is there, and again, I'm just speaking as a novice, how is what you do different from a psychologist or a therapist?
That's such a great question. Thank you. A psychologist is someone who is going to be working with people who are not necessarily healthy, meaning you might have someone who's bipolar. You might have somebody who has a deep depression that they need meds for. I don't do any kind of prescription of working with drugs, which is what a psychotherapist, someone who is who has a PhD, they're people who are trained to work with the chemicals in your body and that kind of thing. And a lot of therapy is per se, for people with master's in therapy, is really focused on how do you get to the root cause of what's going on with people. But for instance, the person who came to me for anxiety and had been given drugs was not given any tools to teach her how, when she wasn't in session, to work with her own stress. And a lot of them are, you know, they're free, they're easy. So I really give people homework. I give people tools. I work with them and reinforce those on every level. I'll work with people in their, not only their emotions and what's going on mentally and what's going on physically. And, you know, if you're a person who has a spiritual, and that's not necessarily religious, but I'll help, for instance, for people to hear their own inner wisdom and guidance. Especially for people who are PhDs, they don't have the time to have sessions like that with people. They're typically really focused on how do we balance someone's chemistry. So I'm working with people who are baseline healthy but want a little help. And they're working with people who, as I like to think of it, as they're swimming in deeper waters than I do.
Gotcha. Well, unfortunately, Christine,
yeah,
we are out of time. If you could please share your contact information for people who'd like to know more about you and your services.
Thanks so much, Al. My number is 248-505-0506. And that is my cell for Crystal Clear Consulting. And my website is my name, which is callison@christineallison.com. And Christine is spelled C-H-R-I-S-T-I-N-E. And Allison is A-L-L-Y, like yellow, S like Sam, O, N like Nancy. So christineallison.com is my website. And it has been such a pleasure. Thank you so much, Al.
It's an honor to have you as part of the show today. So thank you so much. Enjoy the rest of your day. Thank you so much.
You too. Okay. Thank you. Okay. Bye now.
Okay, we're going to move on. John Acker is going to be our next guest. He is with Convenient Tax Service. So we'll bring him on right now. John, how are you, sir?
Hey, good afternoon, sir.
What's it like over? It's kind of a funny thing, you know, with the weather. You know, I think I was wearing shorts, and today it was so cold I couldn't even believe what I was going through when I went to the post office. I'm like, ah. So yeah, love Michigan. If you want something different, wait 10 minutes. You know, I guess as we're going into 2018, I think that, you know, your presence is a really important thing, and I know that. At the beginning of the year, or actually before the new year, Trump signed a new tax bill, and there's all these changes, and I guess depending upon who you listen to, it's either the greatest thing in the world or it's the end of the world. Can you kind of go over what does all this mean right now to us?
Well, that's a big question for a short period of time, but let me try to give it some context. So what I'm about is not just doing tax returns. The major benefit of Convenient Tax Service and me in particular is I am Metro Detroit's premier certified tax coach. Certified tax coaches nationwide study specifically on techniques on how to reduce a tax bill for an individual or a company or both. And as a result, we can save money no matter what the rules turned out to be. And let me explain a little bit more. We have four main categories of the strategies we use, and they affect timing, which is when you pay the tax. So that's many people will fund their 401k at a job and do that before tax so that they wind up paying tax later instead of now. Second is income shifting, where you want to move taxable income to a lower bracket taxpayer, like oftentimes children. Code-based strategies, and the whole new tax bill falls in this category. And there's a couple, you know, a couple highlights there. The most popular are Section 105B, where family medical bills can be deducted as a business expense. Or now, the new Section 199A, which will affect how business income is taxed. And then there's product-based strategies, where you would invest in some type of product, a trust, separate managed accounts, insurance, and there's a variety of those. So this kind of thinking is different than what many folks are used to, but we make it easy to get a taste of this approach, and it's a tax discovery session, which is complimentary. We spend about 30 minutes reviewing the folks' returns, ask some questions, and offer some tips regarding mistakes and missed opportunities we see. And if more work is warranted, we'll do more follow-up after that point. A little bit more about specifics about this change. So easiest place to start is there's four things that will affect almost everyone. Most folks are familiar with itemized deductions, where you collect a lot of information about mortgage interest, property taxes, state income or sales tax, and those are all still things. but they changed the standard deduction. And that will cause much of that record keeping to not be productive unless you do something different. They also got rid of personal exemptions. That's something people probably didn't pay much attention to. You count up your, like, let's use an example of a married couple with two children. So they would have four exemptions, and those were used to be worth about $4,000 each to reduce the income before the tax is calculated. Well, those are gone.
Oh, whoa.
And so, you know, everybody will have their taxable income will go up by whatever those exemptions were worth. Okay. Now, the itemized, the standard deduction went up. So for people who used to itemize, they might not anymore. And then the other knob to turn we'll look at is the child tax credit. That actually got more generous than it was. So let's look at a couple that make, say, $100,000. So we'll take a case where they had formerly had itemized deductions worth about $24,000, mortgage interest, and property tax. We'll say it's made up of that. Then it's a family of four, so they would have had four exemptions. Child tax credit was a thing for them. Let's assume those children are under age 17. So tax in 17, to tax year 17, would be about $6,000. Going into 2018, their tax will go down. And it'll go down because the child tax credit got larger. Credits are worth far more than deductions because that is treated as if you wrote a check. So in that case, their tax will go down. It'll go down about $1,200 a year, $100 a month, $4 a day. So the new tax law is worth a Starbucks a day for somebody in the family. Now, if those same children were college age, their tax bill is going to go up about $1,800. So that's $150 a month, $5 a day, a bigger Starbucks a day for somebody in the family. So, yeah, the tax for, you know, individuals, wage earners, bill makes a difference, but $5 a day on the outside.
Okay.
What we really want to look for is ways to save big money, and that's where we can come in with tax planning. There are means where we can move that $100,000 around and make it $80,000. Now, that's big money, and that's why tax planning is so valuable regardless of what happened with the new tax bill.
So when is the time? I guess so the time is that, so we're here we are, we're just, I mean, people haven't even gotten their W-2s for 2016 yet. We're talking about 2018. How do we transition for people who, you know, people who haven't done their taxes that yet this year? Is it something where they really need to sit down with you now to get a plan in place for going into next year?
Well, here's the thing. 17 largely is done. There are some tools we can use in 2000, you know, to affect 2017, but it's pretty much going to be old rules, old situation, and so doing those returns, if we are, we're happy to help, but the real value is planning for what 18 is going to mean, and the beginning of the year is the best time to do it.
Okay, good.
Because we have, in fact, I got a couple of cases that are starting up right now. Got some folks that are interested in investing in real estate. And the trouble now is one of the tools people used to have is they could borrow against their primary residence, use that money to fund a second or third house or apartment or condo or whatever they're going to use to rent out or use as a vacation home. Well, the rules have changed over what real estate interest can be deducted. So any moves people make now, they got to think differently about where they're getting the money to borrow and be very careful what they do there. And you know, some of the things we used to want to do for planning would be to use home equity interest to fund things like college tuition and be able to write off the interest. Well, that's no longer an option. So tax planning needs to take into account the new rules. And there are wonderful opportunities in the new tax law. They're so wonderful that people who are in a position to change from wage earner to self-employed would be well advised to do it, because this new tax law is significantly more favorable to self-employed.
Oh, hang on, I just lost. Hello, are you there?
I'm still here.
Okay, good. Just, you like blinked out for a second on me. I apologize.
Oh, that's unfortunate, because I was saying some profound things about people that are self-employed may want to investigate how they, or people that are self-employed are better off than people that are wage earners from a tax perspective.
Gotcha.
And it's a significant change.
Okay.
Want to hear more about that, or should we
go into another element of this? No, please go. Again, I have something where I'm having an issue right now on my side that I don't know that I'm being, if I can be heard on the radio portion of this. So please continue on. I got to see if I can get myself back in. I think only you can hear me right now. I don't think they're hearing me on the radio side of it. So please go back
to
that.
Oh, beautiful. So I can just keep talking, because Al can't,
just keep going,
you all can't hear Al. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Talk a little bit about charitable contributions. There's a, because of this change in the way itemized deductions are handled, the way the standard deduction has gotten larger, people who do significant charitable giving might not see a tax benefit from that. And there is a way to regain some or all of that benefit, and that's by doing what's called bundling. That's not a sketchy political thing, but it's a way of structuring how you do that giving so that your beneficiaries, the charities, still get the funding they were getting, but you regain the tax benefit. And what all bundling means is that you will actually transfer the cash for giving in maybe every other or every third tax year. And, you know, if you're in a position to be able to isolate that much cash at one time, there are several different tools we can use to keep the tax benefit. I sent a note to my clients basically the 23rd of December, once we knew what the rule was really passed, suggested that they investigate a donor-advised fund if they had the cash available, to actually transfer the money in 17, deduct the money in 17 on the tax return, but actually perform the giving in 18 or later, depending on your preferences. That was a fast, inexpensive solution that was available. Now, that same tool may be useful going forward, but it won't have the same impact, because that particular move was a way to capture the benefit of the tax law in a hurry. And that's all we had was 7 business days or so to get that done.
Gotcha. All right. Yeah, I'm sorry about the interruption in there, bud. It was just something where, again, I'm trying to play studio and host at the same time, and when it goes out on me, I'm like, I got to figure this out. So a lot of great information. I really appreciate everything that you shared. For people who want to learn more, can you please share your contact information so they can get a hold of you?
Sure. If you want to see something in writing, a little bit more about what the new tax law might mean, some of what I discussed, email us at admin@convenienttax.com. That's convenient tax, all one word. Or you can call us 248-982-7178.
All right, awesome. Well, John, thank you so much for calling in today. And as always, you're just so much information. It was amazing. Thank you so much, and enjoy the rest of your day, buddy.
Thank you, Al.
Okay. Talk to you soon. All right. We are going to move on. Our next guest, actually, we're going to have Owen Rothen. Owen Rosen, forgive me, from Kemp Klein, or from Phil Klein Insurance Group, and we're going to bring him on right now. I just got to find his number, and it'll be just a moment. Try a couple extensions here. I know you're still there, John, and Eric's still there, and it's I'm having the same issue I had right at the beginning of the show, where it's blocking me from it's blocking me from hanging up. I guess it's like it's not allowing me. I cannot end my conversation with you. It was an issue when we started the show at the beginning of the block. We had this issue, and it went away for almost 2 hours. Now it's back again. So I don't know where I'm going to go with this.
I'd love to keep talking, but yeah. If I hang up, will that help?
No, it's not, because I'm actually frozen, and I'm just really kind of contemplating on where I want to go with this. I think what I'm going to do is for our last two guests that we have. I really apologize, but I think I'm going to end the show on this segment. And we will reschedule the last two and to get them on and give them their opportunity to call in. But it's something where we're limited on time at this point. I think it'd be kind of frivolous to start over again with doing this. So I will reach out. If you guys are on hold listening, I will reach out to you, and we will schedule another time for you guys to have your chance so I can get this interview done for you two as well. So, John, really, I do appreciate you being on the show today. And I will end it with you today. So, as always, the way I like to finish my show is God bless America. Take care, everybody, and we'll see you soon. Thanks, John.